slide, please. Slide number 10. A schools were by far the most numerous and least controversial, given they were based on the traditional concept of a student going during the day and returning home at night. As BIA education efforts were standardized, day schools became the sort of equivalent to elementary schools, feeding students into either boarding schools or local high schools, and you could have dozens and dozens on one reservation, split up per reservation district, for example. In this slide, we see a shot of students down in New Mexico, along there with an inquisitive deer off to the left. Important to note, records for individuals attending these schools often move with the student along to their next school. So strictly day school student case files are rarer to find. As with the reservation boarding schools, records of these schools are usually mixed in with general agency records, and we'll see that later in the presentation today. Next slide, please, slide number 11. Mission schools, as mentioned earlier, were not run by the BIA, but are often erroneously thought not to be documented in our collections. So many early on were boarding schools, but they dropped that aspect. The costs were high and they couldn't retain students, so they largely switched to the day school model. And while there is not the level of detail we have for other schools, mission schools were required to submit monthly reports to the respective agency of which students were there, attendance, dates, and the like. So depending on the agency, these were sometimes saved. Many of these schools, as with the accompanying churches, are located deep in tribal lands. Part of the allotment process during the assimilation era granted allotments to schools and churches. One such example, St. Anne's Indian School in North Dakota, seen in this image from our holdings, still educates Turtle Mountain Chippewa children today and is still open. Next slide, please. Slide number 12. So if an individual you're researching doesn't show up in any BIA school records, there is a strong chance they simply attended a public school, which shouldn't be looked as being superior to BIA schools. The assimilation aspect was just as acute given the curriculums and prejudices. The number of students attending public schools really took off around 1920. Here, 10 years later on this slide, we can see a snapshot from just one reservation of how many students were attending each type of school, and over half were at a public school. Again, as with mission schools, the local BIA agency required reports from public schools, so if these were saved, one can find proof of attendance and some limited information. You see public school records come up a lot in financial files. Since reservations are exempt from property taxes, some school districts required the BIA to pay for each student, setting off a complicated formula for that exact cost. This image here from the Library of Congress, it's simply the best image I could find for an early 20th century rural school. Native children probably didn't attend this one in Huron. It's a few hours from both the Flathead Reservation to the east and the Coeur d'Alene Reservation to the southwest. Next slide, please. Slide number 13. So for a visualization of school locations and how they changed, I want to show you a couple of maps. So next slide, please. Slide number 14. Here are the schools in 1899. Both types of boarding schools are marked, and the day schools are simply numbered. So indulge me for a second. Take a look at Colorado. You see two non-reservation boarding schools noted. Grand Junction and Fort Lewis. Now with that, let's jump ahead 20 years. Next slide, please, slide number 15. To 1919. Now, look at Colorado again. Those two schools are long gone, and now there is only a new reservation boarding school on the southern Utes land. As mentioned earlier, this was emblematic nationwide, the closure of schools throughout the years, and it leads us to a records problem that I like to call, next slide please, slide number 16, law schools, or at least that's what I call them. As I mentioned before, non-reservation schools were sort of their own little island, reporting directly to DC. The rule of thumb I seem to have found that if they closed before World War II, the records of the school were often not saved. What remains is a spattering in various general BIA files. Some agencies at different time periods like the Navajo Agency and the Wind River Agency, compiled student case files from all types of schools across the country of all reservation children. And so case files from law schools can show up that way. Agency reports on who they sent, agency student censuses, or annual and statistical reports into DC are all additional sources about the activities of the law schools. In this slide, we see some records from one such law school, the Genoa Boarding School that was in Nebraska, closed in 1934. This graduation commencement program can be found in New Mexico's Charles Burke School records, and this list of students found in Montana's Flathead Agency records. Often in these cases, too, local institutions and colleges will work to assemble what little documentary record is left on the school, as well as collect oral histories and whatnot, so to sort of create a more of a localized history for them. Next slide, please, slide number 17. Before we go any further into our talk today, into student case files, let's detour quickly to restrictions. General school and agency records typically have few privacy restrictions given their age, but that is not the case with student case files. Privacy laws are in place to protect the individual. There can be information that isn't the most flattering or whatnot in these files. So even with those that are old enough to be open, bear that in mind when researching. But really, they were kids. Kids often in horrible places, horrible situations. I mean, I myself got into trouble in the 10th grade, convicted of obstruction of justice, ended up on probation. So such troubles or disciplinary records are hardly indicative of the individual. Generally speaking, a student case file is closed to the public for 75 years after record creation. As long as the student is alive, only they or someone with the power of attorney can access it. If a student dies, that restriction ends, and this can be proved with a death certificate or given that later records have Social Security numbers, the Social Security number death index. But it is on the researcher to prove it. Many student case file series are mixed with dates, so the entire series is closed to blanket reference until all the files are older than the 75-year restriction. The case files used in the rest of this presentation today are all open, either because they're old enough or, unfortunately, are from students who passed away. Next slide, please. Slide number 18. And one more stop before we dive into student case files. I want to talk a little about names. In the early years, a big part of the assimilation process was the assigning of English names. And dissertations have been written on this very topic, so I won't dwell. But to say that school records can be a useful tool in reflecting this, where one can see what was changed and better help connect other genealogically useful records. So here we see an excerpt from a list of students showing the assigned English names. Later in history, names also present a roadblock of sorts for research, especially in tribes not used to the idea of surnames, so generic ones, meaning son of or grandson of, were created. And then, as unfortunately given the high mortality rate, even into the 20th century caused, children shifting around and thus acquiring new surnames. Then lastly, you have the possibility of incorrect, different spellings by officials. So the shifting of family and misspellings are both seen here on this slide. All four of these records are for the same Betty. So all these issues can add wrinkles in researching. And with that caveat, let's now look at some actual student case files, what one can find in the boarding and high school case files up through the 1970s. Next slide, please. Slide number 19. So, the earliest student case files, they are really even hardly that, when you can find them. For some schools, like the Albuquerque Indian School, opened in 1881, fires during the history destroyed early records. So here's one for Francis King, who came from the Oklahoma Territory to Carlisle, and this is it. There's scant biographical info, how long she was there, and then a follow-up form on what she did after school. Throughout the history of BIA schools, they were really big on learning what a student did after the school, which can be useful in learning who they married, where they moved, and such. Next slide, please. Slide number 20. So now at the turn of the century, you start to see more records saved. Medical records, applications for the non-reservation schools, outing forms, where the students went and how they were, correspondence, detailed grades, promotion records, Financial records start to appear, usually in regards to travel to and from the school, and that's the topic of the handwritten note down at the bottom of this slide, where Ramona was given permission in 1918 to go home for Christmas. Elsewhere in her file was a letter from 1917 where the school superintendent forbid her from going home that Christmas, her pueblo only roughly 35 miles due west of Santa Fe. He wrote that no students should go home for Christmas, a real peach, but sadly that was the norm in the era. Next slide, please, slide number 21. Between the world wars, we start to see more standardized forums across schools, which dive deeper into family info, asking about siblings and what schools they attended, parents' jobs, and we see the first official student photograph. We also start to see more student counselor type records, behavior ratings, as well as standardized testing results. And it never fails. I see some of these, and I have flashbacks to those Iowa Basic tests that we had to take in elementary school. Also present starting around now will be earlier school records from day schools and other boarding schools, starting to give one a more complete glimpse of the entire academic career. Next slide, please, slide number 22. As we saw to a limited extent in Francis's early file from Carlisle, we now start to see extensive documentation of post-school life, actual questionnaires that are mailed to students after graduation to inquire as to what they've done. So with John's case, it was most likely due to his closeness to the principal, as evidenced in the personal postcards he sent here as he trained to become a Marine code talker. Side note, Huerito did go on to serve with distinction in the Pacific, earning the Bronze Star and Purple Heart in his three battles. But we also start to see records that are more personal, writings or artwork from the students themselves, as well as more detailed transcripts. Counseling records, health records, standardized testing results, travel records, however mundane, do lead to large files at times. Students in work programs will have forms detailing that work and location, where at, and then the evals for the work. And then hearkening back to the early years of BIA schools, vocational training was again emphasized for some students. There was a special six-year program for older students, 16 to 20 years old, with little or no education. They had received the basics and then some sort of vocational training and leave with a certificate. Next slide, please. Slide number 23. And this is similar to our last slide with some extras. Here at the Intermountain School, we see annual student photographs, yet more detailed academic records, and often Soundscriber discs as a student's diction exercises. The poor material and recording system means the quality varies and cannot handle many playbacks. Our motion picture branch does have the capability of attempting to capture the audio, though our field units have nothing locally to do so. In this era, you also may see university transcripts. Again, the BIA was very interested in the post-school life and so would collect such records. Next slide, please, slide number 24. So for mentions and records of individual students, we talked about the case files. But now let's talk about where you can find additional files about students, schools, the type of records, and how to locate them. And in some cases, it's easy. There are dedicated series from a school, whether it's an attendance ledger or an administrative file series from a certain school. However, in other cases, you have to dig into the general BIA agency files to glean out the school-related records. BIA agencies used a host of filing codes, varying by agency for many years, until a standard decimal code system was put in place in 1926. With those codes, one can narrow their hunt within hundreds of boxes to zero in on school records that might be of use. It is important to note, the records saved do vary greatly by agency. So what you might find, say, in the Fort Bidwell agency records out in California won't be the same or as detailed as what you might find in the Shawnee Indian Agency records down in Oklahoma. Now, some agencies would lump all their administrative files together in a massive series, and others would split them out into education, construction, financial. Again, it varies greatly by agency. Next slide, please, slide number 25. So let's dive into what's out there. I've mentioned reports before, so we'll start there. The government loves reports. And here are two examples detailing mission and public school attendance found in the Fort Belknap agency files under the 800 file code of education. So in the earlier years, the agencies would compile these descriptive lists of pupils, this one here from 1887, for kids sent to each particular school. Now, these reports evolved, but the information stayed largely the same, as seen in this 1936 attendance report. Even more reports emerged in the 20th century. Student censuses, found in the 54 decimal code, are these massive lists of all the students overall and the schools they attended. Then there were the annual, semi-annual, quarterly, monthly, I'm not joking here, reports that were generated for the headquarters in D.C. that were both statistical and narrative, discussing the operations and accomplishments of the schools. Now, remember back when I said non-reservation schools reported directly to D.C.? It's in these formal reports, largely reproduced on microfilm series M1011, that are one of the best sources to find out more about those law schools we talked about. But back to this slide. This report on attendance of students at public schools are a boon to find, because if you're researching someone who didn't go to a BIA school, you might still find where they attended via such reports, as long as you know the tribe. Again, though, it can be a crapshoot if they were saved. Now, all right, we've talked enough about reports. Moving on. Next slide, please. Slide number 26. Let me just get a drink of water quick. All right. Yeah. So individual health records, they can be found in the student case files, but general health records can also be found. And while they may not be perhaps of the greatest use to individual researchers, the aggregate information found in them can be a goldmine for academic researchers studying health issues. Schools struggled with illnesses. Outbreaks of smallpox, measles, tuberculosis, trachoma were constant issues. Here we see a form for documenting students' weights. We see a monthly report from the Charles Burke School down in New Mexico. Sorry again for bringing up reports. And then, unfortunately, a plat of the cemetery at the Santa Fe School. BIA records, especially early on, show how cold the agency could be in these regards, sending sick students home seemingly before they passed, or demanding parents pay to ship the bodies home of deceased students or else not get the bodies back. Again, this academic topic is better explained and addressed elsewhere, but here's where the records are found. Next slide, please. Slide number 27. Well, not really pertaining to individuals, but I found that researchers often enjoy the records of the school buildings an ancestor attended, where they were and how they were laid out. These can be found in several filing codes within general files, education matters, but also building and construction. This 1861 classroom diagram comes from our cartographic branch in College Park, Maryland, and the school land plat, showing, for instance, where the well water was good and bad, comes from a lodgepole school up in Montana. Next slide, please. Slide number 28. As we all probably remember, school newspapers or newsletters from our own education, BIA schools were no different. These are very sporadic. Technically speaking, they probably should have been considered temporary records, but were saved anyways and are now found in our collections. Some schools were good about saving them, and others not so much. Our online catalog, which we'll talk about later, is a good place to start to see what might be easily discoverable. For the Chilocco School in Oklahoma, our Fort Worth branch has digitized many of the Indian School Journal magazines from there and placed them online through our catalog. These seen here were saved by the Navajo Agency for whatever purpose. Next slide, please. Slide number 29. Sports. Sports were a big part of the BIA school experience, and this is really seen in the general admin files, with rosters, photographs, letters detailing equipment acquisition. Here we see the dominating 1933 season of the Albuquerque Indian School football team, as well as the women's basketball team from the Rapid City Indian School. Early on, women's basketball was pretty big. The girls' team from Fort Shaw in 1904, after going undefeated across Montana, beat an all-star team in St. Louis, Missouri twice to be crowned the world champions at the World's Fair that year. Next slide, please. Slide number 30. Schedules are another of those items, along with menus, too, that one can find in agency records that further flesh out a student's tenure, what exactly they did and when. Here we see one such daily schedule from the Sherman Institute out in Riverside, California. Next
slide, please, slide number 31. Then there are the generic photographs capturing student life. Here we have a classroom shot from a glass plate negative of the Chilocco School, along with a 1971 shot, one of my favorites, of a student band up in Oregon at the Chemehua School. Next slide, please, slide number 32. And then lastly, student art, found either in case files or in dedicated folders or scrapbooks. Here are a couple pieces from students here in the Southwest. Next slide, please. Slide number 33. All right, so let's tie it all up in a research example. Gretchen Oler King was born on the Fort Belknap Reservation back in 1922. Here we see her at age 3, captured in the photograph that accompanied her family's industrial survey entry taken in 1925. Next slide, please. Slide number 34. So you go the easy route first. You run her name through our online catalog of collections, folders, and items, and you get a student case file hit. Next slide, please, slide number 35. Which, after clicking on and reading, you see the file is located here in Denver at the National Archives branch. So you reach out. Next slide, please, slide number 36. And we get our student case file. The file is thin, but given it's from a reservation boarding school, it is somewhat rare and gives us some good info. Again, note we have a misspelled name. Old King, that was corrected to Oler King. Had that not been caught, our research would have been derailed a bit. This is also why when we get a student file request and come up empty, we often think outside the box and for different iterations in case the name was misspelled in like disregards. Next slide, please, slide number 37. And we also get a copy of an application to the Haskell School. Now, this is the best source of seeing exactly what other schools she attended. Note how she first attended a boarding school, then a day school, before heading to a non-reservation boarding school. Now, these applications are filled with genealogical information on the family, as well as personal info on the student, such as hobbies and books they enjoyed. Next slide, please, slide number 38. So with dates and other school names, we then dig into the Fort Belknap Agency records regarding schools, and we find some rosters from her time at the day school and the boarding school. Note the 1 week gap in attendance of everyone at the Big Warm School there on the left. Elsewhere in the folder, it was noted that the school was shut down due to a measles outbreak. Next slide, please. Slide number 39. We also get a schedule of what her day was like at the boarding school. Now, I know there's lots to read in these two images, so I'll take a break here to note at this point that all these slides are available for download and reviewing on the National Archives Virtual Genealogy page. Next slide, slide number 40, please. Though researching further, since she applied to the Haskell Institute, she might have went there. So we go back to our online catalog and look up records from that school, and we see they're at our Kansas City facility. Yeah. Next slide, please, slide number 41. And it turns out she did. The Bismarck Indian School she was attending closed, another of our law schools, so she transferred. We now have an updated photograph and, again, a misspelled name, Gretcham. Don't even know why you would think it was spelled that way. Next slide, please, slide number 42. But as is sometimes the case, the previous school records are carried over, so we still get an academic snapshot of her time at Bismarck, seen here on the left, in addition to Haskell, seen here on the right. Next slide, please, slide number 43. And we also get the original version of her application. As I mentioned before, these standard four-page applications have a great deal of information. Gretchen enjoyed volleyball, for instance, and reading, Call of the Wild, Tale of Two Cities, Indians at Work magazine, which was actually published by the BIA to highlight CCC ID activities. The Smithsonian has a complete run of these online. Ours are a little more scattered, but getting a little bit off topic. Now, next slide, please, slide number 44. Gretchen's entire Haskell student case file is 132 pages, largely because of material like this, memos, evaluations, schedules. Next slide, please, slide number 45. And lastly, Gretchen actually doesn't have much for health records. Typically, you'd find physicals, immunization records, but not here. This is about it. It's a doctor's note regarding a swallowed pin in her sewing class. Next slide, please, slide number 46. So how does one do their own research? Our online catalog is useful, as we have seen throughout this talk, for learning what record series are out there, which schools have their own collections, or where agency records are at, and it can be searched by keyword, creating agency, date, record group, NARA facility. Feel free to play around at catalog.archive.gov. In some cases, student case files can be inquired into via phone or email, and copies made out to send. But as many of the research avenues mentioned today, one will need to visit in person at a National Archives location and really dig into the records, as very little is digitized and available online, and the work needed to go through the folders is beyond what our staff can do for the public. BIA records are located coast to coast, from our grand facility on Pennsylvania Avenue to the National Archives at San Francisco, with a host of additional locations within that 2,817-mile span. Next slide, please. Slide number 47. Another good start is our American Indian Records webpage, where you can learn more about starting genealogy research, explains the type of records, provides information on which tribes are covered by which agencies and where those records are at. There is a page here that lists agencies and tribes by state, as well as a page for BIA schools that have dedicated record collections arranged by state. We have some big improvements coming to this site in the next year or so, so please, please check back. Next slide, please, slide number 48. So before I open the floor to questions, I wanted to pause a moment to tell a story of a former student at the Intermountain Indian School in Brigham City, Utah. Tony Deadman of the Navajo Nation graduated in 1964 with vocational training to be a welder, and was widely praised by a school advisor. 1 year later, however, he found himself arriving in South Vietnam, and 10 months after that, he was killed in action in an ambush on a no-name hill, along with 11 of his airborne comrades. So I'd like to dedicate this talk today to Tony, to all the other BIA school alumni, the warriors who gave their lives in defense of a country that often looked upon and treated them as second-class citizens, if as citizens at all. So thank you.
I really appreciate your talk. That was a...
Next slide, please. Slide number 49. All right. So, do we have any questions queued up? Any questions live?
Yes. Thank you, Cody, very much for your excellent presentation. You've already had a number of compliments. And you might be having invitations coming in for some other conferences.
And here I am battling a cold, too, and yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome on behalf of our online audience.